Okay, so today we had a fire in the building where we were holding meditation, group meditation. So we are broadcasting here from my apartment instead, temporarily. Tomorrow we should be back to the correct place. So if you just bear with me here, just gonna get set up, turn on some lights, and then give a short talk. Our meditators are going to come late, so I'm just going to give a talk in English over the internet, and then at 7:30 they'll come up and we'll do group meditation together. So. Meditation practice is something that has the potential to change our lives. It has the potential to bring to us peace and happiness and freedom from suffering that we would have thought impossible before. It takes us out of the set of experiences and reactions to them that we're used to. It changes a great amount of what we call who we are. And it does this because meditation is the practice of changing how we look at things. Changing our basic set of reactions to the reality around us. And for meditation to be effective, thus we can see that we will need to take it seriously. Meditation is not something that you can do on the side or do as a vacation or practice once a day or so on, expect to get any real results. Meditation is something, it has to become a new way of looking at the world, a new way of living our lives. Because suffering and mental turmoil doesn't come only when we sit down and meditate. It can come at any time. It can come when we're driving a car. It can come when we're sitting at home. It can come when we're using the computer or watching television or talking to our friends and our family. It can come when we're at work. they say Mara. Mara is the evil one, or Satan in Buddhism. They say Mara doesn't take a day off. So there's no break from danger. And by danger here, simply mean danger from suffering, or danger from doing the wrong thing, or saying the wrong thing, or thinking the wrong thing, being caught up in a cycle of suffering. It can come at any moment. You may be sitting comfortably and suddenly something happens and makes you very angry. Or so you're sitting very comfortably and suddenly something, you want something, you need something. So meditation isn't something that we can say, well, we'll do it once a day or once a week or once a month or once a year. Meditation has to be something that becomes who we are and becomes our part of our lives. And the more better able we are at integrating it with our lives, the more benefit it will bring to us. Meditation, if we just look at this word, it does say a lot, and it's too bad that it's lost some of its impact. We don't really look at the word anymore. The word meditation means to contemplate. So it doesn't have to be just sitting, or it doesn't have to be a time in your day or your week or your month or your year that you take off to meditate. It can be contemplating anything. It's a process of learning. Early Buddhist meditation, if you practice it for any length of time, you realize that it's the process of turning the whole of our lives and the whole world into a learning experience. You know, we talk about how we learn things in our lives, and we certainly learn a lot. But we miss a heck of a lot more. We miss, say, 90% of the learning opportunity. And we make mistakes, and we don't learn from these mistakes. And when we're meditating, we learn from everything. We learn from every moment. We can learn from walking down the street. We can learn from driving our car. We can learn from talking to someone. We can learn from eating. We can learn from going to the washroom. We can learn from showering. We can learn from doing laundry, brushing our teeth, anything, washing the dishes. We can learn from the whole of our lives. It becomes a school. Our lives become one big learning experience. And this is really the wonder of meditation, which is what is so exciting about it. So, so exhilarating, this idea that we found this practice, or we've been given, or it's been passed on to us, this practice, whereby suddenly we can make the most of our lives, really make the most and make our lives entirely meaningful. So all of this is to say that meditation shouldn't be something where we just do a meditation course or do a meditation round, and not to put down these, belittle this the experience of doing intensive meditation, but it's something that we have to understand eventually has to become all of our life. Our life is meditation. We live our lives meditatively. We live our lives contemplating and considering everything carefully, being clearly aware of things. So normally, as I said before, when we're angry, it's quite a while before we realize that we're angry, and we've already done and said things that we probably wish we hadn't. And when we want something, it takes quite a while before we realize that we wanted it. We may have already chased after it or gone for it and feel kind of depressed afterwards, that we're so addicted to this or that. And meditation changes that. Meditation allows us to keep up with experience, keep up with the rhythm of life, and break things down to their constituent parts. So we see when we want something, well, there's the wanting, there's the happy feeling associated with the wanting, there's the object, and there's our thoughts about it. There's all these different parts. And when we see it like this, we break it apart, and there's nothing in any one part of that that's really attractive, really of any value. We see it has no core. It has no essence. There's no essential value to the objects of our desire. And with anger, the same. As we start to acknowledge, saying to ourselves, angry, or disliking, or pain, or so on. We realize as well that there is no core to any of it. There's no core to the thing that's making us suffer. So it's not really painful, or it's not really unpleasant. And there's no benefit from being angry. Not only is there no benefit from being angry, but the anger isn't us. It isn't I am angry. It's only something that arises, something that comes up. The most pure and simple way you can look at all of the states that arise in our mind is that they simply arise. They don't belong to us. They don't have any essence or value. They simply are what they are. This is the clearest you can come to experiencing things as they are. The most clearest estimation of things, of experience. And the benefits of this are immeasurable. It not only makes us happier and more peaceful, but it also makes us a better person. And this is something that is often missed. I think talking with people who are not meditators in the West, who have maybe no interest in meditation, but somehow we get talking, they feel like they're really happy. A lot of people, they get the idea that they have a great amount of happiness, perhaps greater than most people, because they feel they've hit upon the right way to live their lives. But they'll also admit that they get angry, and that they have greed, and that they have conceit, and that they have opinions, and so on. They have many things that, when pressed, they will admit are unpleasant, are unwholesome, or maybe won't even admit. I do know people who won't admit this, who believe in the broad range of experience that anger is human, greed is human. Without these, we would be a robot. We would be heartless. And you really can't break this view or this idea until you start to meditate, until you start to consider carefully what it is that you're talking about. Because it's easy to have a view. It takes no effort to have a opinion about something. An idiot, someone who knows nothing about a subject, can have an opinion on it. And so we can easily say whatever we want about reality. We can say this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. And with impunity, because there's no there's no difference between one opinion or the other. They're opinions. The problem, of course, comes when we understand that some opinions are false. When we come to analyze it and ask ourselves, well, does this mean that every opinion is true? So if you believe that when you throw something up, it doesn't come back down, for instance, or when you push something, it doesn't move, or so on, force, or these laws of physics, it can be tested and it can be found to be false for the majority of cases. And really the same goes with meditation. That's exactly how meditation works. That sure, you can say that greed is good, anger is good, But what do you mean by good? You know, what you mean is that it brings you some benefit. And the question is, have you analyzed this? Have you really studied this to see if it's true? You can have this view that this broad range of experience is the best way to live your life, and you should never cut off any part of your experience. And on the one hand, I would agree with that. I think too much of our problems in the world come from repressing negative emotions, repressing negative mind states, those things that we don't, we can't bear with. Those things that we feel bad about, the guilt feelings. Much of our problems in the world come from repression, people hating themselves and so on, and feeling inadequate or imperfect. And there's a lot of this in the world, quite a lot. But that doesn't mean, and it, of course it seems to mean for many people, that you should conversely chase after these things. I mean, there's a reason why people feel guilty about them. It's because they've analyzed them and they can see that they're wrong, and the only thing they can think to do is to repress them, which of course doesn't have the greatest effect. The consequences are that you you get sick, you get you can become even perverted in the mind. It's like trying to repress a gas or this oil spill or something, you know, trying to keep it down, and then, you know, suddenly the seabed starts cracking, and it comes up in other ways, and you get an even bigger problem. Well, we have this in the mind. The mind, as we repress things, we find that the same defilements come out, and they seep up through the cracks in the floor of the mind that we've been using to push them down. But that doesn't mean that these things are good. I mean, the reason we're pushing them down is because they're bad. The problem is pushing them down doesn't work. So when we talk about chasing after, or not chasing after, but accepting and appreciating things like anger and greed, delusion, conceit, and so on, we enter into the idea that everything is good. We enter into the view that everything is positive, that there's no negative emotion. We enter into this extreme idea that anything goes, which of course I think most of us would at least profess to disagree with. We would agree that there are many things in the world which are not right. You know, beating people up is not right. Hurting other people is not right. Stealing, in many cases anyway, or stealing to the extent that it hurts someone is not right. Many people believe that stealing is okay as long as you're, you know, robbing from the rich or whatever. You know, today we went to try to register this trailer that we'd bought, and we bought it, and there was a space to fill in how much you paid for it, and I didn't do the buying, but it was under my name, so I had to write down, and I wrote down the price. And today we went into the Department of Motor Vehicles, and when the man who was with me saw it, he said, "Why did you put down that price?" Or maybe I pointed out to him, I said, "Look, the last owner, he only put $500, and we put down almost $3,000. I said, "You know, look at him." And he said, yeah, you have to do that. You should have put $500. So, he was trying to explain to me how it's not wrong. You know, everybody does it. And he said, "It's not cheating." And I said, "In what way is it not cheating?" Directly cheating. But the point here is that many people don't agree with the idea that all stealing and all lying is wrong. I'm not advocating for any lying or stealing. Of course, I was adamant that I would rather pay the exorbitant taxes for the sale. then to cheat and to save money. Of course, it wasn't my money anyway, so I really didn't have let them figure it out themselves. But at any rate, we can agree that there are many, many. There's a limit, and there are many things which are disagreeable to the vast majority of us. And we find people who cross these lines disagreeable, and we believe that they're wrong. But then we can ask ourselves, where do we draw these limits? And what is it those things? What is it? What are the things that cause us to cross these limits? Because if we look carefully, and the problem is that we don't, but when we look carefully, we see that it's these very things that cause us to cross those limits. And that in fact there is no barrier where you can say, I stole this much and that was okay because it didn't hurt anyone, and then if I stole a little bit more, suddenly I'm hurting someone. You can see that you're hurting both yourself and other people when you live like this. When you're hurting society. This is why society runs the way it is, with so many checks and balances, so many watchdogs and so much policing, regulations. We wouldn't need policing, we wouldn't need regulations if it weren't for exactly this, that most of us cheat, most of us lie, and many of my students have a real hard time in meditation. Not many, but some of my students have a hard time in meditation because they're unable to grasp this. I know many people cheat on their taxes, and it's simply not proper to do so. It's simply not a proper way to live your life. It's a sign of mental crookedness. And I'm sorry to say, but what we can see when we practice is that this is really having an impact on our minds. That when we lie, when we steal, when we cheat, when we kill or hurt other people, it really has an effect on our minds. And so there are certain states of mind which we simply have to do with that. We simply have to change about ourselves. So this is one thing that we can use to sort of reaffirm our incentive or interest in the practice, is this realization that meditation not only makes us more peaceful, but it also makes us a better person. And this is how we can sort of rationalize when our practice is unpleasant, because it often will be. And it's pretty easy to dismiss the doubt that comes from unpleasant practice as you continue on once you practice intensively, because you have to admit to yourself that you've got problems. If your meditation is not pleasant, it's not peaceful, there's no reason for you to blame the meditation. If you're still blaming the meditation practice, it's a sign that you're really not getting it. It's a sign that you're still not really practicing. Once you practice intensively for some time, you change your the way you look at things. You start to see it's not the experience of whatever I'm doing, it's my reaction to it. That's the problem. It's my mind. It's how I look at things. It's how I respond to the things around me. And so meditation is a readjusting of our perceptions of things. It's sort of a cleaning out of a lot of the garbage that we keep in our minds. It's a way of understanding, coming to understand things. It's a way of examining things, like under a microscope. Without a microscope, we could have never found germs or cells or even down to atoms. We would never really understood the nature of matter. But even with matter, no matter how far we go, we can never really understand the reality of the mind without looking at the mind under a microscope. I'm reading this interesting study or survey, and I guess, what do you call it, like it's an overview of many of the studies and research that's gone on in regards to the mind and the connection between the mind and the brain. And something that was interesting that I really still haven't quite grasped is the idea of the part that the mind has, the role that the mind plays in physics, in, say, quantum theory. Because quantum theory says, or part of quantum theory, or some quantum theorists have the idea, and again, I'm not a physicist, so I might not be getting this entirely correct, that before a particle is observed, it is theoretically in every state possible. So this example of Schrodinger's cat. He's got a cat in a box, and there's a gun aimed at the cat that's hooked up to a particle. A certain particle somehow, so that if the particle moves in one direction, the gun fires and kills the cat. If it moves in another direction, the gun doesn't fire and doesn't kill the cat. And according to quantum theory, both things have happened. Both things happen when you do this. So until you... But the interesting thing is that when you open the box, only one thing has happened. And this is incredibly difficult to understand. I don't quite... But there's something there. What makes it easy to understand, I guess, is turning this over on its head and saying, wait a minute. You know, you're looking at this from a physical... You're looking at this from a certain point of view, and that's the materialist point of view. So our core principles are making it complicated. If you understand reality from a mental point of view, it makes perfect sense that you can never really have a complete theory of physics, because the mind is creating the universe as it goes along. The mind is being seen in quantum physics, is having an effect on all particles. In the mind, what they say is it can even have an effect on particles that are billions of years old or billions of years ago or so on. Rays of light that are coming in, from distant stars and so on. Meaning that the mind is actually creating, one theory could be that the mind is creating the universe. And this is a theory that is not discarded by many physicists, of course not all physicists. But the idea that physics is just a construct that has come about by this huge conglomeration of minds or of mind substance, I thought that was quite interesting and really puts into focus this idea of training the mind that. Instead of thinking, well, this is my life, here I live in this building with all of these people, and this is my reality. Looking at it from a point of view of the mind, and coming to realize that actually reality is experience. That right now I'm experiencing certain things, I'm seeing certain things, hearing certain things. And this experience is being created by my actions and reactions to the... stimulus. And this latter way of looking at things is infinitely more beneficial, infinitely more useful than a materialist point of view, because the materialist point of view easily falls into so many problems and creates so many problems. It's created this environmental degradation and, you know, not the theoretical materialism, but theoretical materialism as a theory has permeated our entire culture to the point where, you know, material is the most important. Getting money, getting possessions, getting physical pleasures. You know, physical pleasures are considered to be the highest, and it turns us into very coarse beings. You look at people who I've talked with and watched certain people who profess materialism and propound materialism, and they tend to be very coarse individuals. You know, simply on that basis alone, the personality type of people who have not taken any interest in the mind, who have no interest in training their minds, who believe that we are who we are because of our genes and sort of this random interaction, or not random, but sort of chance or happenstance interaction between particles and cells and organisms. And so we just live our lives as we live it. You know, if whatever we want to do, we do it. This way of living, we can see that brings about a certain type of personality. And on that basis alone, I'd say I wouldn't want to embrace that sort of theory. It is not the sort of person that I'd want to be. But on a deeper level, when you start to look at things, you know, from whatever perspective, it's very easy, if you're open-minded, it's very easy to see that the mind is really the most important thing. And it's quite profound to read this about the quantum theory, that it says that the mind is the one that creates the decision, that makes the decision whether the cat has died or the cat is still alive, the particle has moved or has not moved, simply by observing it. Because that's the first thing the Buddha said, or the first verse that we have of the Buddha's teaching in the Dhammapada, which is Manopubhangama Dhamma. It really gives that verse a new meaning. It means mind perceives all things. And, you know, from a meditative perspective, we understand this. From a Buddhist perspective, we understand the theory. But to hear this from quantum physicists really drives it home that, you know, these particles are created by the mind. The mind comes first. The mind is the first thing, and the second thing is the particle, or is the reality. So that's a little bit wandering, I suppose, but here are just some general thoughts on meditation practice, and coming back to earth, coming back to what is really useful for us. What this all means is that we should incorporate our practice into our daily lives, that our meditation should become something that we do when we walk, something that we do when we sit, when we walk, we've been walking, when you're sitting at your computer here, instead of fiddling with the mouse and looking at this or looking at that, take the time to really appreciate this time that we have together and sit in meditation. Or you know, if you're looking at something or whatever, you know, try to figure out what it is that's causing your mind to wander. What is it that's causing your mind to chase after things? You can learn so many things when you want to do something. First there's the wanting, then there's the doing. So if you understand the wanting, you don't need to do it. You don't need to chase after the object. And we do this again simply by contemplating it as it is. When you want something, wanting. When you don't like something, disliking, and so on. Trying to be mindful of just about everything that comes, mindful of the body. When you're eating food, you can scooping, opening your mouth, opening, chewing, swallowing. When you wash your hair, washing, scrubbing. When you brush your teeth, brushing. When you lie down to sleep, lying and rising, falling. Mindfulness of pains and aches and soreness whenever they come up. Instead of reaching for the Tylenol or the aspirin or the painkillers, instead just remind yourself and analyze it for what it is, see it for what it is, pain, 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 until it goes away. And you won't need to take a painkiller, you won't even feel upset by it. You'll feel so much relieved, so much more relieved by your ability to accept things as they are. When you're thinking, say to yourself, thinking, thinking, and emotions that come up, liking, liking, disliking, disliking, drowsy, distracted, whatever negative mind states arise, picking up them. These are very important. When you like something, liking, liking, stopping yourself from chasing after things or running away from things. When you feel drowsy or lazy, that stops you from getting things done. When you feel distracted, it stops you from focusing. When you have doubt, it stops you from doing anything. And when you do this, this is really the tools that we use to examine reality and to learn about ourselves and to come to understand experience, understand things as they are. So that's the talk for today. And I think maybe just in a few minutes we'll have a group up here meditating. It looks like there's another fire or smoke or something, so just bear with us, and we'll be practicing here until 9 p.m. Just might take us a few minutes to get organized. Okay. Well, thanks for coming anyway. That's all for the talk today. Next up is meditation.